Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance, neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling, to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and I got my favorite, my special guest, who I get to talk to once in a while, my secret insider from the Federal Reserve, and of course, it's the author of the book Fed Up, great book, and of course, the CEO and president of Money Strong, Danielle DiMartino Booth. What's up, Danielle?
The tenure.
Yes, and it's going higher. I think it's going over 3%. What say you?
You know, it's interesting. We've had a real tug of war in the tenure. I actually looked back to see when the last time the tenure closed above 2.9%. And you might be saying, well, that's nothing compared to, you know, it's been a dramatic year. February the 22nd. So we really did hit some kind of a ceiling when we crossed 290, and then things kind of came back after that. But that was before, you know, that was before I think the market started to price in not theoretical inflation, not the threat of inflation, but bona fide coming out in earnings reports, showing up in places like the Philadelphia Fed. It's before people saw actual inflation. And what we're seeing right now is the real deal. Is it going to last? Well, that might be your next question.
Well, okay. Is it going to last?
Yeah, it's hard to say, Todd. I mean, when you think about some of the drivers of the 10-year rate, some of the drivers of inflation recently, you have, what, $360 billion of insurance proceeds, and because of 2017, the year of the natural disaster. So you had this magnificent drawdown of inventories, and now you're seeing the inventory rebuild, but put on top of that, the fact that we've got all this tariff talk. So some companies are actually doing what we call panic buying. So it kind of remains to be seen what the next chapter is for price increases after the inventory rebuild has occurred, if this tariff talk turns out to be more talk than anything else. I like to say, let's quote Winston Churchill, and you know, he said, yaw yaw is always better than war war. Well, yaw yaw is always better than currency war. So if this is all bluster coming out of the administration and there's not going to be any follow through, then I think that there could be an inflation scare, and then for there to be a retraction of that scare, which would kind of prevent that 10-year from holding onto that 3% level that you suggest.
Well, I want to. So let me ask you. I say my opinion is we've been in a currency war since this whole mess started, and in my opinion, in my view, the Fed and the central banks around the globe are controlling the currencies and trying to keep the pressure on the dollar, because it helps control not local interest rates, but worldwide interest rates. What say you?
You know, that is absolutely very, very true. And let me tell you, the rest of the world does not want for us to begin exporting inflation. That would not be a welcome development. It would explain a lot of, you know, it was interesting. A trader friend of mine sent me a screenshot recently that showed that every single bond market in the world was having a bad day. In other words, yields were going up across the board globally. That is, I'm going to use a technical term here. That is no to the bueno. That will not be welcomed by the markets.
Now, when you say not welcome by the markets, I'm from the school that we don't really have a free market right now. That's my opinion. I think that the, again, we'll go back to the Fed, not to pick on the Fed, even though I don't like them, but not to pick on the Fed, but we don't have a true free market because asset classes are supposed to be able to price themselves, and whatever's fair value is where the market will trade it. And I think that because of the things that the Fed and other central banks around the world, including Japan, with their owning 55% of their equity market, they have stifled what we know is a true free market. What do you think?
Oh, I think that that's unquestionably what the case is. And in fact, you know, I'm remiss to say it's different this time because those are some of the scariest words you could ever hear with markets. But by the same token, I look at all of the bullish talking heads out there, and they're correct. When a yield curve inverts, when the two-year yield ends up being higher than the 10-year yield, normally there is 2 years of runway in between that moment in time and when we're actually in recession. But I'll throw the question back to you. Have we ever had to use the yield curve as a signaling device in the aftermath of $21 trillion of global quantitative easing?
Well, of course, we have never had to do that because we haven't had this. But again, I think this is, in my opinion, the fallacy of everything that's been done to this point. This goes back to my original thought that they should have let the banks go under. But that's another story for another day. But my point here is that when you don't allow markets to trade freely and smoothly, and you have to continue to step in as Bernanke did in May of 2013 because he got nervous about the stock market. The first thing is the Fed shouldn't have no interest in what the stock market's doing, other than if the world is collapsing, then they're responsible for monetary policy, not for supporting the market. And furthermore, the way they've handled this whole interest rate hike system has been brutal. It has not been at all to what I would expect. So there's no wonder that we're going to have an inversion of the yield curve. It's no wonder that I still believe that the average middle class person is still in recession, no matter how good the economy is supposed to be. What do you think?
No, and I would certainly agree with that. But the funny thing is, as I was sitting there listening to you talk, you were sounding a lot like Jay Powell.
Well, I hope that I don't listen to him that closely, but I hope that's what he sounds like, because
Todd, he has said it on multiple occasions that it is not the Fed's job to prop up the stock market. And some of his lieutenants, including Uber dove Lael Brainard, has come out and said the same exact thing. It is not the Fed's job to prop up the stock market. If there has been a shift in thinking, and clearly on day one in office, Jay Powell dealt with a quadruple digit decline in the Dow Jones Industrials. And guess what he said on that day? Nothing. He said not a word. And he has not. I mean, can you imagine Janet Yellen sitting still when the Dow Jones Industrials declined by 1,000 points and not sending out some emergency press release that the Fed is going to be at the ready to ensure financial stability and the sanctity of the banking system in times of need? No, she would have had that press release released that day or the next morning before the start of trading. And what we heard from Jay Powell was crickets.
Crickets, very interesting. But hopefully that Jay Powell will be the guy who actually does step up and does do the right thing, as we have seen for the last at least, 30 years. We haven't had a Fed chair do the right thing. So hopefully that'll work out. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horowitz. We're with Danielle DiMartino Booth, CEO and president of Money Strong, and also an ex of the Fed and the author of Fed Up. In the meantime, don't forget to download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm. And of course, don't forget about our high school program. If you'd like to help us out, it's check out highschoolinvesting.com to see what we're doing. And then if you'd like to help us, you go to Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaTrading. And you can certainly help us improve the education and get more good, solid Fed governors in the future. This is The Bubba Show, and I am Todd Bob Horowitz with Danielle DiMartino Booth of Money Strong. And we'll be back more from Danielle after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Money Strong's Danielle DeMartino Booth and the author of my favorite book, Fed Up. And make sure you check that book out. I got to tell you something. If you want a clear view of what goes on in the Federal Reserve, get the book Fed Up. You can get it on Amazon. It's in both Audible and reading. I've done both, and I listen to it all the time, so make sure you check out Fed Up. Okay, dear, so Powell said nothing, which I appreciate that, and I like that. And, of course, you are correct. Both Bernanke and Yellen would have said something, and it would have panicked. And I think that is one of the problems that we have in the markets today, is we do not have the ability to have somebody step us out. Now, if Lael Brainard, who is, you know, she was always, to me, like the cleanup hitter. Right. If things were going bad and they needed a real dove to come out, she was always the last speaker. That's not the last thing people would hear that would prop back the markets up. Right. I mean, am I wrong in the way I see that?
No, you're not wrong at all. So that's what makes it even more intriguing to me, that she has taken up the communications. She's on board with a lot of the things that Jay Powell is contending, and that to me is remarkable in a good way.
Right.
That means he's got control.
I hope you're right. I don't want to be bitching all the time about what I don't like about the Federal Reserve. I'd like to never hear from them. I think that was one of the things that has come out of the last 10 years, is they become much too visible, and they're really not supposed to be that visible. They're not supposed to care. And as far as this exiting their positions, in real truth be known, they don't have to exit the positions. They can hold those bonds to maturity if they want, can they not?
Of course they can. But if you look back at the 2012 transcripts, which were just released in early January, that was the first glimpse that we had into Jay Powell's thinking. And even though the guy ended up reluctantly voting for QE3, he did so based on the contingency that a very articulate exit plan be in the works beforehand. And he was talking about the importance of shrinking the balance sheet way back then. So, yes, they can hold them to maturity, but if all they did, Todd, was hold the securities to maturity, then quantitative tightening would be occurring right now at a much more aggressive pace than it is. The Fed is still engaged in buying up bonds as they roll off the balance sheet. They're just buying up fewer of those bonds and allowing some of them to mature and roll off permanently.
So when you mentioned earlier, you talked about the currency war, but then you said trade wars. Now, my opinion, I'm going to give you my opinion first, but I think that Trump is doing the right thing by stepping up and saying, hey, we don't want to get the advantage. We just want to be treated fairly. And we want to see, you know, when we send something, a car to China, it's 25% duty. When you charge it back here, it's 2.5%. We want to see that adjusted correctly because you're no longer a third world nation and some of the other things. So I think that Trump is doing the right thing. And I have no problem with any of this trade wars. I think it's a bunch of hooey, in my opinion. Obviously, I'd say much worse, but it's a G-rated show. But I think it's a bunch of crap. And I think that this is going in the right direction. And I don't think that the Fed should be concerned about the trade war either. I don't think it's going to happen. We are in far too much debt to Japan with the amount of bonds they own. There's too many issues that could go awry if something did happen. So I think that it's more of a negotiating ploy, and I think that it's solid and better for the country longer term. What say you?
Look, I think that corporate espionage is a no-no. I think that all the years that we have allowed China to get away with it is egregious. I think it's embarrassing and it's shameful. And I'm happy that they're being called out. Are tariffs the way to go about fixing the problem? No, they're not. And the last thing in the world the Chinese want, the last thing in the world that they want, is for there to be a trade war breakout between the United States, because they own even more bonds than Japan owns, as you just brought up, Japan's big holdings. Nobody wants a trade war. It really is, the onus is upon the United States to follow through with execution. And I don't think we're going to go there. My only concern is that you get a lot of head nodding, you get a lot of conciliatory speeches out of China's president, like we saw recently, and that there is also no follow through on his part. President Xi Jinping has made conciliatory speeches. He made one in 2012, and he made another one in 2016. And guess what? Their markets are still not open to United States foreign investment. So he talks a good game, and he sounds and looks like he's holding out an olive branch, but his follow-through has been really awful in the past. And so you have to ask yourself, what is the Trump administration going to do if they find out that not only are they jawboning the issue, but that the Chinese are also jawboning the issue and just playing nice in the sandbox verbally, but that their actions continue to impede upon intellectual property in the United States?
Well, I think that Trump, my personal opinion, will stand firm here, and there could go into a little bit deeper. But I think in a trade war, I think that this is not, in my opinion, Hoot Smalley. This is not, in my opinion, Reagan's tariffs, and this is not Bush's tariffs. This is a whole new ball game, and we're in a whole new world right now. And I think that if Trump holds firm, that eventually we will win out. Now, it might cause some short-term grief, but I think that we will win out because, let's face it, they're our biggest debt holder, and we are their biggest customer. So you would have to think that if they want to continue and continue the growth that supposedly is going on in China and increasing their middle class, then you would think that they would come to the table ready to negotiate properly versus just a lot of happy talk. What do you think?
You would think. But on the other hand, they have a very high opinion of themselves. And it's been forever since they have actually followed through on any of their. I mean, their word is worthless, and that is going to upset the president if it happens again. But a tiger does not change its stripes, and if anything, the new president has gotten his arms around more power than he used to have by effectively declaring himself to be dictator for the rest of his life.
I understand that, and I agree with that, but don't you think that one of the reasons they've been able to get away with it so long is that none of our leaders, and it doesn't matter which party you're from, but nobody's ever stood up to them and really held...
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely true, and China may want to become an economy that is more like the United States, more driven by domestic consumption. They may... Look, I want a lot of things. Todd, I'd like to be born again tomorrow and look a lot like Angelina Jolie. That ain't
you already do.
So the fact is, though, the Chinese continue to be an export driven economy. And if we wanted to play hardball, we could hurt them in their sectors.
Correct. And that's where I'm going with this. So I think that there's a lot that can be done. And I believe, in my opinion, we're on the right track for the first time in my adult life. And since I'm 61 years old, I think this is the first time that I've seen that we're really fundamentally on the right track. But we'll come back with Danielle after the break. And of course, you know, there is a lot of things going on, and we're seeing the 10-year trying to push over that 3% level. And, you know, you've got a lot of things that are a little bit squirrely in the markets right now. You know, you've got everybody trying to push them higher. You have the continued sentiment from many saying bye, bye, bye. And, of course, we know that when they all want to be bye, 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 it's probably time to sell, sell, sell. Now, again, we are telling you that the markets are at key levels and key decision points, and there are always things in the market that create action and what we should or should not do. And of course, right now we are watching very closely, as we saw with the action, you know, Sunday overnight into Monday, and we've seen some action that is pushing markets in weird directions. But I think you have to watch this area and watch the metals and watch the bonds, and you're starting to see a whole bunch of stuff happening. But I think the real key will be the 10-year notes, which at over 3%, I think causes some grief and aggravation. In the meantime, we are with Danielle DiMartino Booth, CEO and president of Money Strong, also the author of Fed Up. And of course, we want to remind you to go to libertytalk.fm every day and download the show and help us reach our goal of 1 million downloads a month. As well as want to remind you also about my daily update. Every day after the market closes, I send out an update through video in which you can get delivered to your inbox as soon as I do it, so that you can be informed and basically get tomorrow's newspaper today. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, and I am Todd Bubba Horowitz. We are with Danielle DiMartino Booth of Money Strong and also the author of Fed Up, and we'll be back with more from Danielle after the break and more about the Fed. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, we're coming right back to you after the break. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to Fed Up. No, actually, it's the Bubba Show, but I'm with the author of Fed Up, and that is, of course, Danielle DiMartino Booth. And I'm telling you right now, get that book on Amazon right now. It is probably the best insight to the Fed and also the best book. And by the way, she did the Audible part herself, and it's unbelievable. I listen to it all the time because I love to get the points and the things that I missed the first time through. But anyways, Danielle, so we've got this whole mess going on. We've got an economy. Now, you were somebody who in 2007 said something smells funny. This does not look right. The markets don't look right. So there's a problem. You are also the same person that has been involved in a lot of this. And I know that you're kind of thinking things don't look exactly hunky dory today either. Give us in your mind, is this the same type of setup? Because we know, as you mentioned earlier, the pundits are bull, 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 buy, 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 but that's, they have an angle to do that. The pundits for ratings and the advisors to get money in the market so they get commission. But in realistic, the market to me looks like it's really treading water, and there's some danger. Danger, Will Robinson, danger. What do you think?
So, look, you know, prior to 2017, the record holder in terms of the number of days that the volatility index closed below 10 was 2007, and there were seven instances in that year that the stock market closed with volatility lower than the number 10. And as we know, 2017 was the year of complacency, if not the markets actually being in an outright coma. Well, Todd, there were 52 instances when the VIX closed below 10 last year. And we've clearly seen an end to those days. Is January the 26th going to mark the highs for the market? I think it will. Is there huge trouble brewing in the household sector, as was the case back in 2007? No, not to the same degree. We've got serious problems with households and buying more car than they can afford and buying more home than they can afford, especially at this juncture. And we're starting to see households really jump in feet first into subprime type of mortgages. But again, of the same magnitude, not at all. But what tickles me ever since last year when Janet Yellen made a speech in London when she said, basically, because the banking system is so much stronger and sounder than it was back in 2006 and 2007, ergo, we cannot have another financial crisis in our lifetimes. And I said to myself, is she really that much of an academic? Is she really that naive that she's not looking at the financial system holistically, that she's not taking all of the components of the financial system into account such that she would recognize that corporate debt markets have gone bananas over the last 7 years, and that it's the capital markets where we have seen all of the crazy go-go leverage overabundance of liquidity. So when people ask me where my focus is these days, it is on the 25% of the investment grade bond market. Investment grade bond market that I perceive as potentially being downgradable because companies have been on a debt fest for years and years and years. And I think that a lot of the triple B rated investment grade corporate bonds are not going to end their life with an investment grade rating. I think that at some point they will be downgraded to junk, and individual investors own these securities based on, guess what? A credit rating stamp of approval that says they're investment grade and therefore you can sleep at night.
Well, first of all, Janet Yellen plagiarized John Maynard Keynes from 1928 when he said the exact same words, that there'll never be another financial crisis in our time. And of course, that is the economic system we live off of. So when you look at these investment grade bonds and you look at all the debt that has been created, I think there's going to be a problem with liquidity in those. And I know that's one of the main things you like to talk about, too. So tell us about what you think is going to happen to the liquidity in investment grade bonds.
So I'm remiss to pump up any sell side firm because, as you mentioned earlier, it is their job to keep us all 100% long the market. And I take issue with that, even though I used to work at one of these big firms. But I will give credit where it's due to a Goldman Sachs analyst who earlier this year came out with the statement, the mantra of the crisis to come. And that is that liquidity is the new leverage.
Liquidity. Now, isn't that sad? That what I find amazing about markets and about economies that we never learn from the last time, right? It's always something else. There's always a new boogeyman, right? They always show up unannounced, and you can go back to any major collapse that you've ever seen. And what we're seeing now is exactly what you're describing, is the potential of investment grade bonds being downgraded, a liquidity issue. And of course, the same people today that are saying bye, 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 everything's great. And I'm not going to name names, but it's not just the one that always says bye, bye, bye. But there's many out there that are telling you that this time is different. The markets are not the same. Things have changed. Are the same ones that were telling you that in 2007 and 2008, and the same ones that were telling you that in 2000 and 2001, and the same ones that were telling you in 1987. All right. But we know that that's not the case. And we know that there's a lot of issues out there. So you being from one of these firms, from the Federal Reserve, one of the smartest people that I know about markets, what do you tell somebody about these markets and what would you advise people? And I'm not saying to buy stocks or anything. I'm just saying, what would you advise in general if you were looking at this from your standpoint? How do you look at this whole situation?
Well, look, liquidity is the new leverage, and it is different this time because we have Dodd-Frank. So investors need to appreciate that when we went into the last downturn, that broker dealers still had tons of bond inventory on their balance sheets, and they were able to act as a backstop when it was difficult to get trades done. That is no longer the case. So I think investors today should be extremely aware of the contents of their bond ETFs, of their bond mutual funds. They need to be really certain that they're holding short duration in their corporate bonds, because refinancing risk could become severely problematic in a post-Dodd-Frank world where broker-dealer bond inventories at their peak in 2007, they were $250 billion. And as a recent Wall Street Journal story highlighted, they've now been depleted to $30 billion. Last I checked, the people who have picked up the baton are private equity firms, and private equity firms are probably not who you want to go to hat in hand asking for a friendly bid-ask spread to sell your bond. No, they're going to rake you over the coals and make a ton of money on the bonds that they own, and investors should be aware of how very different the liquidity backdrop is compared to what it was in 2007.
Isn't that the truth? Now, let me ask you something about banks. Now, I'm anti everything. I just became, as I get older, I learn more about what goes on. Now, we do this stress test, right? However often they do it. But I say to you, Danielle, that my opinion is not one of these banks has enough in reserve to cover what they have outstanding the way that they're supposed to by the letter of the law. That's my opinion. Do you have an opinion on that?
No. Okay. I really don't. I'm not as into the weeds as I once was. But this is what I have to say about banks. I found it to be interesting that last year, in order to provide some relief to small community banks, mid-sized banks, that the Fed chose to let them off the hook and not do stress tests on these banks. But in order to offset the ginormous number of compliance individuals they've had to put on the payrolls over the years to comply with Dodd-Frank, what have small and mid-sized banks done? Do you know? I'm curious.
I do not know, no, but I'm sure you'll tell me.
They have loaded up to the gills on construction loans, on commercial real estate loans. Their exposure to the sector is enormous. It's at record levels, and I'm not so sure that regulators have their eye on it. Am I worried about leverage at the big banks? To the extent that last year when somebody informed Angela Merkel that the net derivative exposure of Deutsche Bank could not actually be quantified and that that could be problematic, and that she therefore said, I guess I'm going to have to stop playing this game of chicken and whip out Germany's checkbook and make sure Deutsche Bank doesn't go under. In that respect, I do have anxiety about how derivatives will behave in the next downturn.
Well, and with good reason, because they've done a lot of damage, because basically most don't understand the derivative market. But we'll come back with more of this with Danielle DiMartino Booth. We'll be right back. And of course, the derivative market is a crazy market. And if you don't understand it, you can get yourself into trouble. We do love the derivative markets, but no, not the leverage ones. But in the meantime, they are great products if you understand how to use them. Don't forget to download the Bubba Show every single day at libertytalk.fm and make sure that you put yourself in the best position to understand what we're trying to do. And of course, don't forget about our high school investing program. As you know, we have a curriculum that we donate to schools. And unfortunately, I'm running out of little capital to continue to support it by myself. So if you'd like to help out with that, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/BubbaTrading. Again, that's patreon.com/BubbaTrading, and help us help our students and youth of America. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. We're with Danielle DiMartino Booth. And of course, she is the CEO and president of Money Strong, as well as the author of the book Fed Up. Great book. Check it out. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break.
It's about time.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Fed Up's author, Danielle DiMartino Booth, the best, the smartest I know, and been involved in all sides of the business. She is the president and CEO of Money Strong, and make sure you check out her website and get a great newsletter I recommend you subscribe to. But in the meantime, so we've covered the banks, we've covered all kinds of stuff, but what I don't like about the banks, and I'm going to make this my last point on banks, is that basically they're at riskless positions based on that the Fed is backstops them, so they can make a lot of bad loans, because what's going to happen is it will have a repeat of 2008, and we're not going to let the banks go out, so they're going to give them money to stay in business. And I find that to be extremely frustrating when the banks that already make a lot of money can go ahead and take a little extra risk knowing that they've got the Fed backstopping. Am I wrong or right?
Yeah, it remains to be seen. People don't realize that if you dig deep into Jay Powell's resume, he was the person at the Treasury Department who appointed Warren Buffett to put Solomon Brothers out of business. He's not intimidated by bankers. He's not intimidated by congresspeople. And the law will have to be rewritten for the Fed to come in and bail out a bank, because emergency contingencies allowing the Fed to do so were removed as part of, you guessed it, Dodd-Frank. So the legal capability is not there. But would politicians fold like a floppy deck of cards and beg and plead on bended knee for the Fed for God's sake to do something? Of course they would. They're politicians. They haven't had spines for years. So it really is going to be a to-be-determined scenario to see whether or not, when the time comes, Jay Powell can be pushed to act and Congress forced to pass a law.
and you say no would be your opinion, the way I'm listening to you right now. Would that be correct?
I'm not sure.
Your opinion. I think your opinion states in my mind, just listening to you, that he's pretty strong and he's not going to kowtow to anybody based on what he sees. That's the way I read you.
He was rip-roaring hysterical during his first press conference. He had 60 minutes, and most economists love to hear themselves talk. Our eyes collectively roll into the back of our heads because we don't like to hear economists talk, but he was hysterical. He was dropping his pencil. He was reaching for his water bottle. He was mouthing the questions after they were asked to him, just trying to make sure he had them straight. And then he would give very quick, curt answers and move on. And he took 43 whole minutes of his 60, and he was like, all right, I think we're done here. Bye-bye, everybody. And that was that. This is a man who worked for a $1 salary when he was in the private sector to come in and educate Congress on the perils of the United States defaulting on its debt. And he's got a net worth of somewhere between $55 and $100 million. So he clearly does not need the Fed's pension either, which means he's there by choice. Now, before I go too far down this, I am the complete leader and founder of the J. Powell Fan Club. I will tell you this much. I'm not certain. I don't have confidence as to why I believe he backed John Williams' appointment at the New York Fed. That raised my eyebrow more than anything, because John Williams is famous for having said, I don't have a Bloomberg on my desk. And last I checked, John Williams was also at the San Francisco Fed when the subprime mortgage crisis blew up, by the way, in his backyard. Do we remember Angela Mozilo? And he was also at the helm of the San Francisco Fed when clearly Wells Fargo was breaking some rules. So why install a pure academic to be the arbiter, to be the guardian, to be the regulator of the financial system at his post in New York and follow financial stability closely if he doesn't even like Bloomberg? So that is the one black eye that I see so far, because John Williams will become the second most powerful individual at the Federal Reserve. If Jay Powell gets a flu, the vice chairman of the Federal Open Market Committee takes over. And that is the permanent position of the New York Fed president. John Williams will assume more power than anybody on the Federal Open Market Committee besides Jay Powell, and more power than anybody on the Federal Reserve Board, period, because he supersedes the power of the vice chair of the Federal Reserve Board by virtue of the fact that he is the vice chairman of the FOMC, which has more decision-making power. Now I've put you to sleep.
Maybe Jay Powell owns a lot of puts just in case, on a long term, in case he gets the flu.
I don't know, but I don't understand why he has a pure academic running the New York Fed. Clearly, it's a point of frustration.
And I don't like John Williams either. So there's another guy I don't like. I didn't like him when I saw him on Maria Bartiromo's show. All right, but anyways, we've covered everything to nauseam, but I got to ask you this. What's this with the secession of Texas from the Union?
Well, I mean, you know, being the eighth or ninth largest country on the planet and having open borders with one of the largest manufacturers, it wouldn't suck. I'm just saying it's economically feasible. Will it happen? Of course not.
Well, they call it Texas, right? I mean, look, I'm in for making California three states, and I would have no problem if anything happened. I mean, again, last question, and this is just out of my, what is your in opinion of cryptocurrencies?
I think cryptocurrencies are teaching central bankers a lot about how they will eventually implement and exploit the blockchain to roll out sovereign cryptocurrencies.
So you think they're real?
I can just see the smile on your face.
Well, you think they're real, correct? I mean, they are real. They are going to be around. I mean, this is not a fad. I mean, they may not be Bitcoin 250,000, which Tapper says, but I think that I believe that they're real. I think that the one thing they are showing you is they are the one true free market in this world right now, because they trade 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it takes a buyer and a seller to make a market. So I do think they're real. I do think they're going to be around. Now, again, is Bitcoin going to be $80 billion? I don't know. I have no idea how it's going to work, but I can already see Ripple, which is working with the central banks and with the bankers about taking out the SWIFT system using Ripple instead. So I do think that they're real, and I think they're going to be around, and I think you've already seen some countries use them as their national currency. So I do think that...
Well, again, because of the three countries that have started down this road, i.e. Venezuela, China, and Russia, as a matter of national security, we have to, by definition, follow. Great Britain's already going down that pathway as well.
Danielle DiMartino Booth, you are awesome. You are the author of Fed Up, which I love, and tell everybody to go out and buy it. I recommend it very highly. You're the best. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for your time.
And that was Danielle DiMartino Booth, the president and CEO of Money Strong, also an ex-Federal Reserve employee with Stanley Fisher, and also the author of Fed Up. So make sure you check out what she does. She is very good, and she has expressed some concerns at what is going on within the marketplace. And, of course, we understand that very well because we have been warning as well. And there are a lot of quirky things happening. But in the meantime, the markets are the markets. You can't fight them, but you can be prepared for them. And that's one thing we always talk about with our hedging program and things like that. And you can find that and also get Bubba's daily update by going to BubbaTrading.com. And all you have to do is when the box pops up, you fill out that and you will get Bubba's daily update each and every day. And of course, you can look at some of the other products we offer. Our futures market model has been doing terrific, as well as the hedging. And I think you can't go wrong. And again, learning how to protect that portfolio. And also, don't forget to download the show each and every day at libertytalk.fm, one of the great station, one you'll never need to worry about. You get to all the program you need, everything in life that you would want from a radio station. So go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show, and also download the Sporting Edge and Cryptocurrency, Crypto Investor X. In the meantime, this is the Bubba Show, and we certainly enjoyed having our friend Danielle DiMartino Booth on today. And again, she is the author of Fed Up. I urge you, if you ever want to learn something about the Fed and what goes on inside, check it out. In the meantime, the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, ever great to everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Always a pleasure to serve. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station, the Bubba Show.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.